Welcome to another episode of the Playlist Podcast. I'm your host, Charles Barfield, managing editor of the Playlist. And joining me for this discussion is none other than Mike D'Angelo, host of Bingeworthy and the Discourse.
Yes, Mike,
this is beginning to feel a bit like a chore, but are you ready to discuss yet another Marvel Studios movie?
Yeah, every time we get together, we're always just kind of like,
Yeah, hopefully it's better this time. We'll see in a few minutes here.
Totally.
For this discussion, we're here to discuss Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. As the title suggests, this is the third film in James Gunn's Guardians franchise, and this is the one that's meant to wrap up the story of these particular characters and set the stage for what's to come in the future. This time, the Guardians are trying to help save the life of their friend Rocket, and in doing so, they discover a lot of secrets about the gun-toting raccoon that change how they view their teammates. As you folks are probably familiar with by now, we're going to start by giving our overall impressions of the movie in a non-spoiler way, just in case you haven't seen the film or just want to hear the gist of what we have to say. And then after a pause, we're going to dive deep into spoilers and really get into specifics about what we liked and maybe didn't like in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. But before we get to our discussion of James Gunn's latest, gotta tell you the Playlist Podcast is part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes Deep Focus, The Discourse, Bingeworthy, and more. And if you want to find us, you could check your podcast app of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, anywhere else you find favorite shows. Okay, with that out of the way, let's dive right in, Mike.
Yay, Guardians.
Guardians. I think everyone listening knows the setup of this movie. It's Guardians of the Galaxy, characters people have gotten to know over the course of a decade. They're interacting again with each other, quipping in James Gunn's signature style, with plenty of needle drops along the way to spice things up. So, Mike, what did you think of the third Guardians movie?
Yeah, so I know you're not much for the Guardians or James Gunn's shtick.
Well, I want to put that out there first. I do enjoy the first Guardians.
Yes.
I did not necessarily enjoy the second one, and James Gunn is starting to wear on me a bit.
Yeah, so I really love the first Guardians film. I think it's probably like top five Marvel or so films for me. Have a lot of nostalgia for it already, even in, you know, 10 years on. My dad, before he passed, like, this is the one he would rewatch a lot. So, you know, it's one of those things I have a little connection with my dad for. But also the second one, I think, is a solid middle chapter. My kids love Volume 2. So I've seen that a bunch. Yeah, my kids really, I mean, Baby Groot is intro scene where he's dancing around is it kind of hooks them in, and then they're kind of in. And then, yeah, one thing James Gunn has going for him with this is he's a writer director who clearly has control of the franchise. If you look at those first two chapters, the Guardians have always been James Gunn through and through. You can feel his hand and his control and his voice, you know, for better or for worse, depending on how much you like that voice. Regardless, with Volume 3, you'd think with this, you know, time he had with the script and being the third volume, that he'd kind of be at his most confident, the most well-written, tightest script. But I'm sorry to say, Volume 3 is just a mess. It's always great to spend time with the characters, love to see them, but the script and the tone are just kind of flip-flopping all over the place. The first, I'd say, half of the movie is very poorly written and strung together. It's like a MacGuffin fest. So you just see bad exposition. We need the magic space doohickey. This is how we get it. MacGuffin heist. And now we get the super jigama what's it. You know, let's have this.
Yeah, look at this new planet.
Yeah, exactly.
And then look at this new planet.
Yeah. And yeah, and then exposition to get you to the next scene. And then let's have like a famous actor that has notoriously bad exposition explain the plan, or, you know, all that. It's like, plus it's like the most heavy-handed needle drop fest you've ever heard in your life. I know Guardians is the franchise that, you know, if it's going to do it, the Guardians of the Galaxy is going to do it. And it's repopularized that kind of needle drop blockbuster. But the first one made it a part of the story. The second one was a little bit less subtle, but it worked. And this one is, it's unapologetic in how many there are and how little reasoning you need for a needle drop. It's like, it's a good soundtrack. I like the songs, but characters are literally just putting on music to ultimately have a conversation.
can I break in here for a second? Cause I want to talk about these while we're on the topic of needle drops. Cause
sure.
I think you set it up perfectly. The first one, it had a purpose. This was Star-Lord's playlist that his mom, his dying mother, gave him. You know, these are the songs that meant the most. And you can feel it. And not just that, each one is of a very specific era, because that was when she made like this pop music playlist. Then now we're at a point where literally a character has a Zune, which is, you know, whatever, funny for its own thing for like the five people that remember them. But now there are playlists from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. And it's like, oh, we're just picking songs that James Gunn likes. Yeah. And now we're just picking songs that might have a title that kind of sort of fits with this moment, you know? And mm-hmm. it's like, oh, now you've lost that mojo, that extra little bit that made it cool and meaningful and special when these characters sang the songs. Now they're just singing pop songs. And it's like, oh.
And I can buy that Rocket got super connected to like the Zune of it all and kind of picked it up and got everybody going into the music. I like the music, so I'm willing to forgive it, but it is the most heavy-handed of like needle drop, needle drop, needle drop. And it's just like, okay, every excuse we can to have this, and it gets a little wearing.
Well, I said it in my, upon reflection, it sounds like this is a movie where somebody wanted to do a James Gunn needle drop fest, but this time it actually
which we've
was.
Seen a lot of since Guardians.
Right. And it reminded me when the first time I watched the first Suicide Squad, not James Gunn's, but the first one, where mm-hmm. the needle drops were just all over the place and there was no cohesion and there was no sort of like theme to them. It was just like, this sounds cool here, this sounds cool here. And mm-hmm. now that's James Gunn doing it. And it's mm-hmm. like, oh, we need to take a break from this.
Yeah, it's less, this sounds cool here, and it's so on the nose that you're like, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So what else? What else about this movie?
Let's go with the villain, which James has teased over and over as like one of his favorite characters, the High Evolutionary, who's ultimately just one-dimensional as fuck. Like,
yep.
Chukwudi Uwuji, I believe his name is. He's a good actor, but he just doesn't do much for me as the High Evolutionary. He's just another all-powerful genius who's easily outsmarted, like, again and again and again.
Yeah, and, so my thoughts about the villain is, for a long time now, because believe it or not, we've been expecting this movie for literal years now because of the drama and then, you know, whatever yeah. delays and whatnot. But so we've known that, I think they just call him Chuck, but that this yeah. guy from that James Gunn apparently worked with for the first time on Peacemaker, which we all know that I was not a fan of Peacemaker. Mm-hmm. He liked him so much, he made them the High Evolutionary in this movie. And the whole time he's like, this is the best actor I've ever worked with. And you're like, holy shit. Okay. But yeah, his villain is so obvious and so one-dimensional. There's no depth at all. And not just that, the performance is borderline like unwatchable in places where he's literally screaming dialogue. And that's supposed to be emotion, where it's like, no, it's just a bad guy screaming. Like, yeah, it just doesn't work for me really at all.
Yeah, and if there's anything wrong with the first film, it's the villain. And I know people had a lot of problem with Ego, but it worked for me. So it's obviously a pattern here where James Gunn and his villains are ultimately just kind of a letdown.
Yeah.
But his heroes are so good that usually you're willing to overlook it, and his scripts are usually funny. But a lot of the humor just doesn't land in here. In the end, like, the whole thing just kind of feels like a side quest again, which... You know, everyone's promoting this thing as this emotional movie to end the trilogy with the biggest stakes, and all the stakes are undercut. There's some mildly emotional moments, but it doesn't add up to much.
Right.
I still love the characters. The movie still has its moments. There's still some, you know, James Gunn sweetness to it. But I, you know, and I'd still take this over like Ant-Man Quantumania or Doctor Strange 2 or a bunch of others. But as a final chapter for the Guardians trilogy, it's really disappointing pretty much my overall thoughts.
I agree. I think that this is a movie that had a lot riding on it because, like you said, this has been billed as the end of James Gunn's franchise. And for that, you would expect maybe something a little bit more epic, something a bit more meaningful, something with higher stakes. And it does feel very, while it does take place all over the galaxy, it feels very low scale. in the overall thing. And the reason for that, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. The reason for that is obviously because he wants to dig deep into the emotions and relationships of these characters, which is great and all. But it's a lot. And it towards the end, it does kind of, it kind of gets into schmaltz, and that's a bummer. So the bottom line for me is, if you love these characters and you want to hang out with them for another 2.5 hours, you're going to really like this movie. That doesn't mean it's a good movie though. And for me, like you said, the first probably hour and a half of this movie is very sloppy in its exposition. And then when the real emotional beats happen towards the end, especially in the final act, it almost borderlines on melodrama and it's a bit too saccharine for my taste. But you know, if you are obsessed with Rocket and Groot and Star-Lord and Gamora, and you care deeply about these relationships, you're going to probably get emotional and it's going to work for you. For me, this film feels like a victory lap for James Gunn. And it's one that just feels very sort of sloppy and very James Gunn. All of the things I don't enjoy in his projects are kind of like amped up to the nth degree, you know, the sentimentality, the lack of editing, because there's a lot in this movie that could have been edited.
Yeah.
The idea that we just want to hang and not necessarily want stuff to happen. All of this stuff is so much a part of this movie that it just kind of ruins it for me. But it's clear, and this is where I'm kind of conflicted. It's clear he really loves these characters.
Yes.
And they're his babies. It's just, unfortunately, when he clearly loves these actors, and he goes out of his way to an almost distracting degree to give each actor a moment or a couple moments. And ultimately, it feels almost like James Gunn's such a fan of his own work that he created a fan film of the Guardians.
Oh, yeah, not wrong.
It's for some people that love that shit, you're gonna eat it up. For me, who, you know, I'm hit or miss with the Guardians, I see the flaws and it just doesn't work for me.
Yeah, that, and you know, if you're someone who's gonna take like kids under like 8,
oh yeah,
to this.
Don't.
It's too gory. It's too scary. Like, my kids were excited to see this one. And I was looking at the runtime like, it's a bit long, but maybe they'll like it. They liked volume 2. So, but there's, you know, a lot of monsters and like weird, like early James Gunn kind of stuff that he throws in there.
There's one moment, which we'll probably cover in the spoiler section, but there's one moment in particular that just borderlines on like horror. And it's a really, really well done moment in the sense that it looks like scary and ugly, but it also is just like, oh boy, kind of shocking. So I think we've talked enough about this in a non-spoiler way. So how about we take a brief moment to pause and then come back to dive into spoilers.
Play that trailer audio.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell you something. I'm Star-Lord. I formed the Guardians, met a girl, fell in love. That girl died, but then she came back. Came back a total dick.
Oh, please. He left out some important information, but that is the gist of it.
Diving into spoilers, I want to first talk about one thing that surprised me, and not necessarily in a good way, about this movie. For most of the film, Rocket is in peril. He's on the verge of death. We also see another scene. This, I think, is like the third in this franchise where a Guardian is in space with no oxygen, about to die. Mm. But by the end of this movie, not only did everyone survive, but they seem to do better than ever. Are you shocked that James Gunn just didn't have it in him to kill anyone in this movie?
Well, that was one of the things when we were driving to the screening, you and me were discussing like, all right, who's going to kick it? Because the trailers make it look like someone's definitely gone.
Like Guardian, like Rocket. They're like, okay, Rocket's going to die, which, you know, obviously if they show that much in a trailer, you know, he's probably not going to die.
Yeah. And you'd think like James Gunn hasn't had a problem killing people in the past.
No,
but man, he just does not want to kill these people. Or Marvel just stepped in and said, hey, we want these characters around, which come on, Marvel. You got to be able to kill people.
Here's the thing. I know
you're afraid after Iron Man's gone and Cap are gone that you're just like, we need people, but come on.
Here's the thing, though. You literally have actors like Dave Bautista and Palm, who plays Mantis, saying, we're done.
Yeah, they don't want to come back.
Yeah. And so it's like, okay, well, you could probably kill Drax. And to be honest, Drax, his story's done, dude. Like, it's gone, done. It probably ended in Endgame, you know?
Like, yeah. They should have given Drax Star-Lord's moment at the end where he saves the kid and then jumps into space and can't survive it.
Right.
And that would have been fine. But no, ultimately, he's fine. He's the dad now.
Yeah, and that's the thing that kind of upset me is that I think I've said this now in like the last two Marvel movie podcasts we've done, but it's not that I'm bloodthirsty and I'm trying to just have all these characters die because I think that's like edgy and cool. It's that after Endgame, the stakes were so high in that movie and we did see death that you realize that when you have these one-off movies, not all of them has to end in death, but when the stakes are so high and nothing of consequence happens to these characters, you seem to just I kind of check out and I'm like, oh, these are invincible. They wear plot armor and nobody wants plot armor in a movie. You know, you want each Marvel movie to feel like its own big thing. And if Marvel or James Gunn or whoever is involved that's scared to kill like Star-Lord because you'd want to carry him on into another movie, then you're missing the point. Like, you have to have, if these guys are fighting a character that is so bloodthirsty, like High Evolutionary will murder civilizations. They say so much and they show it. Then there has to be some sort of stakes that will be like, oh, wow, this is legit. This was not just the side quest. This was a major moment in the lives of everybody involved.
Yeah, he just does kill a planet, but it's a planet of people you don't really have any connection to.
No.
You know?
No, the only major deaths in this movie, and they are emotional, are Rocket's friends.
Yes.
The only problem with that is we just met them.
And that is the thing that holds the movie together as watchable for me. Rocket's story is really good and should have ultimately just been a Rocket spinoff. Like
it would have been such a good
and made it its own story, like a Rocket group movie. It would have worked really well. Everything else feels kind of like an afterthought that's poorly written.
Yeah. Yeah. And the hoops he has to jump through to get each one of these characters involved in a way that makes sense, especially Adam Warlock. It's so ridiculous that
Kraglin.
Yeah. It's like, or Cosmo, like none of these characters are of consequence at all in this movie. But each one gets a moment, which is something, I guess. But yeah, it's just when you have a movie like this, when it's the end of a trilogy, it doesn't mean deaths have to happen. But if you really want something to hit home, it's such a easy and good, and it could be such a memorable thing to do just to have, you know, somebody do like a heroic sacrifice instead of giving everybody, you know, just this such a good, bright, happy ending, you know, I don't think anybody's expecting, but that's what you get.
Yeah. I mean, Star-Lord is a bit melancholy.
Is it though? It. Is it? I mean,
he's going to find himself, you know, or grandpa. I don't know. There's not a lot where it ends and you're like, wow, this has really changed things. They can ultimately get back together.
Yeah, that's the other thing is this didn't feel like an end. It felt like an end in the sense that characters literally say, I'm done.
Yeah.
Which is such
And you're like, why? This is the family you've built over 10 years. And it's just, okay, all right.
For Drax to be like, yeah, I'm gonna hang out here and be a dad, you're like, what? And then Mantis saying
that clicks with me because he lost his family, has ultimately been looking for that, and you never get to see him as a dad or how good he was as a dad or if he was meant to be a dad.
But they try to tell you in this, but
yeah, I like it, you know, on paper. It's just the way it was played out wasn't perfect you know?
And then Mantis being like, I need to find myself. You're like, really? Like that, yeah, you Mantis, take a weekend or something, you know, go do some growth. But, and then Star-Lord could have gone to Earth in a heartbeat and just been back by like next week.
Yeah.
There's really no reason for the Guardians to be like, oh, we're done. And you know, whatever, like it just, it didn't make sense.
Yeah. I do like, I mean, as far as both of those after credit scenes go, would I watch a Star-Lord spinoff? Yes. Would I watch the new Guardians of the Galaxy with that team? I think that's interesting. And I like that they time jumped and, you know, you're looking at, you know, something in the future, open to it, but there's nothing where I'm like, wow, I can't wait to see what's next for this.
We'll get to that more in a bit because I got thoughts about that too. But
okay,
we briefly mentioned it, but I want to spend a little bit of time talking about Adam Warlock. This was Will Poulter. It was highly publicized that Will Poulter was going to be Adam Warlock. This is a character James Gunn had been apparently trying to get in the second Guardians movie, but didn't happen for whatever reason, either timing or, you know, edits or what have you. It was
Gasp restraint.
I know. It was teased at the very end. It was one of the end credit scenes, you know, we're gonna call him Adam, whatever it was. And he's just kind of a joke. He's a super powerful joke, but he's kind of a joke after the opening scene. Well, not opening scene, but the opening of when we're introduced to Adam Warlock. That's pretty cool. But outside of that, he's treated as kind of an imbecile. He's kind of silly, just kind of like how James Gunn treats all his characters. And ultimately, he just didn't serve much of a purpose.
Yeah, it was disappointing. I really like Will Poulter, former guest of the Discourse. Check it out if you want. We do briefly touch on Guardians 3 and his excitement for it, but he couldn't really talk much about it at the time. But man, for all the hype of like Adam Warlock, he's just kind of like this dumb side character. And then he's left in an interesting place, but ultimately he's this overpowered hero that you now have to like, hopefully they don't vision him where it's like, well, now his powers are all useless.
Yeah.
You got to figure out what to do with a guy like that. Which all the power to you, Marvel, good luck.
It just, it's like I said, it's really not that Poulter's bad. He's good
at what he's given.
And he does it very well. It's just, he doesn't have a lot to work with. His role is really that of a lackey. Elizabeth Debicki, who returns as whatever her name was from the second movie.
Hey, there's a death for you.
Yeah. She gets blown up in a really kind of silly way. And she's just like a shell of the character that she was in the last one. She's reduced from like main villain status to, you know, henchman, in a very not fun way. I want to see Adam Warlock. Okay, I guess. Like, I don't know. I'm just kind of left.
Would you want to watch a solo Adam Warlock thing though?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Let's talk about another thing about James Gunn. there's a lot of discussion about him always putting his friends in these movies. And Guardians 3 might be the most egregious example of that yet. It's interesting because there are other filmmakers that put their friends in movies and family in movies, looking at you, Adam Sandler. but James Gunn seems to be the one who gets called out more than anyone. What do you think about that? And did any of the plentiful guest stars in this movie take you out of the film?
It does kind of shoot you out real quick. You're like, oh, hey, that guy. Oh, hey, his wife. Oh, hey, you know, all that stuff. But I'm not someone who gets up in arms about it. Like, it's James Gunn's right to do that as he pleases, much like it is Adam Sandler's right to put all his friends in his movies. It doesn't really bother me, you know, that much. I know there are a lot of fanboys who are like, stop casting your wife. But I don't give a shit. Like, cool. She's fine. She doesn't hurt the story. Ultimately, she's a decent enough actor to not kill the whatever she's doing. But I don't know. It doesn't bother me that much.
Yeah, I here's the thing. It takes me completely out of these movies. it really does. Every time I see Nathan Fillion in one of these, I'm just like, really? Do we need him in this? And he has kind of a silly role in this. And it's good for him. Like, he's good in the role.
At least he finally got in the movie. You know, he was supposed to be in like 1 and 2, wasn't he?
He was in 1. He played like a mocap character.
Right.
And then the second one, he was going to be Wonder Man, but they cut him out. Simon Williams, I think. Mm-hmm. And so this one, he does get a speaking role where they use his real face. And it's very Nathan Fillion. It's like this. Yes. He does his shtick. And, you know, James Gunn's wife shows up. Ratcatcher from Suicide Squad shows up. Not to mention just everybody else who has already previously been in a James Gunn movie who returns, like his brother is in, I think, 45 of these roles are Sean Gunn.
Kraglin is really unnecessary. Like, yeah, the arrow plot line, the dog plot line. It's just, it's very on the nose.
I'm glad James Gunn thinks Kraglin's a good character, because I really dislike the character.
I liked him in two. I did like the arc he had in two. It was very sparing. It wasn't too heavy-handed.
Yeah, okay.
I liked the moment that he had at the end of like the fireworks erupting, and you see like the joy and, you know, elation in his eyes and that.
But that was really kind of his story, right? Like, it was kind of done. We finished.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yondu,
you didn't need him to have his whole storyline, you know?
No. And then this one, they just ham-fistedly force a story about him trying to figure out the, you know, it's literally been years, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
and he sucks real bad with that arrow. Like, what have you been doing, bro? Anyway.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think a lot of it, like the death threats James Gunn gets now, because he puts his wife in movies, is kind of funny to me. Mm-hmm. Because it's not as if James Gunn hides her in movies. He gives her like prominent roles, which is just hilarious to me. And boy, when she shows up, just know that this is like, you know, this is James Gunn's wife and she gets to lead this scene. So that's cool. But okay, I'm glad we just, you know, I just want to talk about that because I feel like we have to.
How awful was Sylvester Stallone in this movie? I'm just going to say it. He was terrible and unnecessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to have him give all the exposition for this heist thing. Like Sylvester Stallone. Ugh. Fuck me.
Also, this may be a very unpopular opinion, but Zoe Saldana as Gamora really grated my nerves in this movie.
Really?
Yeah, her story, which I was thinking was going to be kind of pivotal in this movie, is just like,
it was confusing.
It really was all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Her hatred of Star-Lord, it just seems unwarranted and mean. Like, just because you came from the past and you have all these people telling you like, oh, we love the old Gamora, you are just like I think Star-Lord says it, like, you're a dick. Like, like, that's not a fun character to have on screen. And it sucks because Gamora has been so good in previous movies, especially like Infinity War.
Spends the whole movie kind of falling in love with the Guardians again to ultimately just be like, oh, I have my own family.
That's the thing, too. It's James Gunn, again, having his cake and eating it, too, with, you know, I'm going to have Gamora fall in love with the Guardians, show a little spark with James or not James Gunn, Chris Pratt, Star-Lord. But then ultimately she's going to go back to the Ravagers, you know, happier than ever.
Mm-hmm.
So weird. Okay. So let's talk about these end credit scenes.
Okay.
The first one, like you said, kind of sets up.
Wait, before we get to that, tell me one thing you liked about this movie.
I thought, here's the thing. I enjoy Rocket and Groot.
Yes.
So I was kind of bummed that Rocket's sidelined for most of this movie. But I really enjoy their interplay. And when they finally get to do it, the beginning, it was really good. And then the end.
Especially that hallway scene, the action in that hallway scene is really good. When Rocket is finally alive.
Yeah.
After just putting that stupid pad on him where it's like magic healing.
Yeah.
I'll just go with it. Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rocket is great.
Yeah. And the whole, it was very emotional to see the animal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think Linda Cardellini, as puzzling as it is to cast her, is fucking great as Lila. Her kind of soft-spoken demeanor just fits so well. And talk about scary stuff. I don't know if this is one thing you're talking about, but the friends and they're kind of, they're like monstrosities, you know, because they're kind of like science experiments. It's very disturbing. I'm sorry.
I said James loves his freaks.
He does. And these are very disturbing animals, but they're so sweet. Floor is cute. I forget what the was his name? Tooth or Teeth?
Teefs.
Teefs. Yeah, he was great. But so that whole storyline's awesome. Again, I couldn't care less about Star-Lord kind of coming to terms with the fact that, you know, he's going to be a single guy on Earth. It's like, okay, cool. Yeah. Drax didn't do much for me. Oh, Mantis was great. I really enjoyed Mantis.
Mantis is always good.
Yeah. And the fun way that she uses her powers and kind of finally seeing her. We saw it in the Christmas special, which her interplays with Drax were the best part. Again, it's much of the same in this movie where seeing her relationship kind of fully grown with these characters is nice to see. I just, that's about it for me. The Kraglin Cosmos story didn't do much for me. Drax's kind of story just doesn't work for me. I feel like he was wasted. Adam Warlock was wasted.
How about the out of nowhere Groot, I love you guys moment?
Yep. Don't like that. Only
where did that come from?
Yeah.
And why?
Yeah. Just doesn't make sense. It's again with the schmaltzy, overly, you know, sentimentality thing that James Gunn's kind of known for. It was like, oh, and that's just meant to make us cry, which to me, it was like, oh, if he could speak English, then fucking speak English. Right. Like, yes. Just fucking do it, man. Like, why are you being all I am Groot all the time when you can just speak English?
Yeah.
I think a lot of that was a callback to the first movie where he says, we are Groot. Which, again, in the first movie, super emotional and sweet.
Great moment.
Yeah, this I love you guys. It's like, oh, okay. Maybe Vin Diesel. Maybe this was the moment that Vin Diesel had been begging for. I don't know.
Vin put his foot down to speak.
Or, you know, James Gunn and giving everybody a moment was like, Vin, I got it for you, buddy. This is going to fucking make people weep.
And it did finally sound like Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
If that's your thing.
Yeah. So all right, fast forward, end credits scene, we get the new team of Guardians led by Rocket, who now goes by Rocket Raccoon, which is cool. He's joined by Groot, Adam Warlock, Cosmo, and a kid who Rocket refers to as Phyla, so you have to assume it's Phyla Vell from Marvel. She was a Guardian, she's got ties with Captain Mar-Vell, and all that, but you know, I'm assuming they're rewriting all that for this. Yeah, she's basically like a kid who was like experimented on by High Evolutionary, regardless, Phyla Vell. The Groot's like massive and huge, literally. So what do you think of that scene and that team as they're presented?
Yeah, like I said, I didn't mind a little banter. I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, a new Guardians of the Galaxy movie. What I would want is someone to just completely come in and just change it up, do their own thing.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need another James Gunn copy or, you know, someone trying to do their own version of that. We need someone completely new, someone who has a vision and who can actually take this team in a new direction.
But Rocket has the Zune, man.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's like... Well, okay, all right. Another one of those things like why, but okay, I'll roll with it.
Yeah Star-Lord went out and died for him, almost, kind of. Never mind, he didn't at all. He was fine. He was totally fine.
He
just went out into space for a very long time, face deformed, 5 minutes later totally cool.
5 minutes later it was completely back to normal, no scarring, no nothing.
Yeah. Then you have the second post-credit scene, which is Peter Quill with his grandpa sitting in, was like Missouri, I think is where he's from.
They're talking about mowing a lawn
and an annoying neighbor. And then it ends with dun dun dun, the legendary Star-Lord will return. So what are they setting up, Mike?
Star-Lord coming to Disney Plus.
Yeah, that's what it really sounds like, doesn't it?
It does. Like, at best, it, like, Star-Lord on Earth trying to find himself is a Disney Plus series
or a special,
not a movie. It could easily be like a quick special.
But that's not enough to carry a movie at all. Because then what are you going to do? Fish out of water stuff again?
Yeah.
Like, do we need that with Star-Lord? Like, is he just going to ask if everybody's Kevin Bacon? Like,
look, I'll give it, I'll give Chris Pratt this. Of all the characters he's done, I'd want to see him play Star-Lord again.
That's an insult to Chris Pratt. You're like, of all the characters and franchises you've been in, the only one I care about Star-Lord.
No, that's not what I said. I said I would want to see him play Star-Lord probably the most out of the characters he's done. And yeah. I don't mind Chris Pratt. I'm not a Chris Pratt hater. Like, he's the worst Chris, like a lot of the fanboys say. I'm more forgiving than probably most people over at the playlist are for Chris Pratt, but still, this is like the character he was built to play.
It really is, yeah.
And yeah, I guess more of that isn't a bad thing.
It's funny though, because what was the recent profile of James Gunn talking about kind of the history of the franchise? He was talking about casting Chris Pratt, and it's a well-known story, but they reminded me that Glenn Howerton was the guy who kind of was leading the casting for a long time until Chris Pratt came along and James Gunn was convinced that Chris Pratt could work. And it makes me think, like, Glenn Howerton, like, how different Star-Lord could have been? Because I just think of Dennis from It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, you know, leading the Guardians.
Yeah. It would have been funny, but a totally different vibe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of less doofusy and sweet, I guess.
Well, you never know. Glenn is a good actor, and I think he has been put in a box and probably could have been very good as Star-Lord, but I like Chris Pratt as Star-Lord.
I think, like you said, this is the role Chris Pratt was kind of born to play. This capitalizes on his charm and his
It certainly
humor
wasn't his Jurassic World character.
No. What's that guy's name?
I couldn't even tell you.
It's probably Bob.
It's not Bob, but no, it's you know, something
it's like it's like Chad or something. Kevin, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, this, if anything, do it as a special. Throw Star-Lord in some sort of movie team up thing. I don't know. But let's not give him a whole series. Let's not give him a movie. I don't know. I don't need him in his underwear in St. Louis, Missouri.
You know? Yeah, it's not really necessary. No. Get him out of there.
And finally, I want to ask you, where do you see this franchise going? Do you think there's going to be another film? Are these just now side characters peppered in? And do you want any of that to happen?
Well, like I said, I'm open to what they've set up, but it needs to be a very different Guardians. It needs to be a very different Star-Lord for it to be something that's worthwhile. Like, I think Marvel's gotten into this place where they're just playing it too safe, you know? So I could definitely see them having like someone come in and just trying to do the Guardians of the Galaxy, their James Gunn impression, and that would be a mistake. But one thing this does kind of leave you with is, or it doesn't instill you with, is faith in both Marvel moving forward and DC moving forward. Like, Marvel, this is like the surest bet they had is Guardians 3. Like, if you can't slam dunk this, there's cause for concern, especially with the history we've seen since Endgame, with a few exceptions. And then, you know, as far as James Gunn and his writing skills and directing skills, he puts together a good action sequence here and there, and it's probably the best looking Guardians movie as far as like certain moments. But yeah, definitely not, as a whole film, as a filmmaker, it does leave you on an awkward note. Doesn't really instill confidence either way.
Yeah, just to get this out of the way, the VFX in this are fantastic.
Yeah.
That's never an issue. The set pieces are very vibrant and interesting, and they look good. And the action, especially the scene that we were talking about in the hallway, is very well done. So yeah, those things are great. But yeah, it makes me wonder if James Gunn can do anything else other than this. Because when he did Suicide Squad and Peacemaker, those are both Guardians.
They're
tones
very
and styles,
yeah,
but with R-rated stuff. And so far, and then obviously you go back to like Slither and Super, and those are something completely different, but the writing a Superman movie feels like something that the filmmaker who made this just doesn't have in him.
Yeah.
And that is cause for concern, because in everything he said, he's like, oh, this one, he recently said that like that Superman Legacy isn't a comedy, like a full-blown comedy. And you're like, well, good. But if it's not a comedy, if you look at like a Guardians movie and you take away the comedy and you're looking at what he thinks are emotional stakes and emotional moments and sincerity
and good villains
then you're left with what could potentially be something incredibly hokey. Yeah. And not great. So yeah, as far as James Gunn's future goes, I'm concerned. As far as Guardians the franchise, I think it's time to pause.
These guys definitely needs to be a little break for sure.
Yeah. Let's pause until after Secret Wars. We can regroup. I think that these characters definitely should show up in Kang War, Kang Dynasty, and Secret Wars if they want. I think it would be interesting. I love me some Rocket and Groot, always will. So I'm down for them showing up in things. You know, whatever they have with Star Wars or Star-Lord, fine, whatever. I just, I think if you want to reboot this franchise, I think it really needs to be rebooted. I don't necessarily agree with the lineup of characters from the end of this movie. I think Rocket and Groot are the heart and soul of this franchise and should remain that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it definitely needs to be a bit more, I don't know. It's too reductive just to say, oh, it needs to be serious, as if that's different enough. It needs to be something else. So we'll see. I don't know. I don't know what you do with this. And
there's a reason they put a time jump there. You know, they have time to kind of make their minds up.
Yeah. And you definitely hit something on the head with the whole post endgame-ness of everything, where it's just nothing has felt right. Nothing has felt like we reached that level again. Not that everything has to have like endgame stakes and budget and all that, but that was such a high that now anything that doesn't even come close to that, or even a good movie doesn't come close to that.
Yeah. I think Marvel's just second guessing themselves too much. You read recently that, what was it? Doctor Strange had 30 rewrites.
Yeah.
And you're wondering like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we're doing too much here, guys. There needs to be someone that kind of rewrites the ship.
And I'm hoping that something like Captain America 4, Thunderbolts, something that is less cosmic, less silly, less multiverse,
mm-hmm.
will kind of right the ship a bit. But
yeah,
if you think about it, it took 10 years to make Endgame, right?
Mm-hmm.
2008 was 11 years. And now since Endgame, it's been 4 years. So we're almost to like a whole third of their history being this weird, you know, phase 4, phase 5, where nothing has felt right. Marvel kind of feels like a shell of itself. And not that there's superhero fatigue, but I think there definitely needs to be a come to Jesus moment over at Marvel Studios where they figure shit out. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the writing. Maybe it's, you know, the new characters aren't popping off on the big screen like people expect them to, or sequels are underperforming. I don't know what it is, but something's not right.
Yeah. Too many plates spinning and too many like second guesses. You need to commit to a vision or people that have vision instead of these writers that'll just go along and do whatever the hell you want, you know, 30 rewrites or whatever it is.
Right.
Yes. You need to be able to do those reshoots and re-steer things as you see fit, but you got to commit to people who are going to make a statement. Like, give the Russo shit for what they've done, you know, since Endgame all you want, but they at least understood them and, you know, Marcus and McFeely understood that you have to like break the MCU and go in a new direction. Every time they hit whether it was Winter Soldier or Civil War or obviously Infinity War, they chose to really shake things up, and nobody wants to shake things up, it seems like.
Yeah. And Marvel movies now seem to be more than ever before made for fans of Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Which I think kind of defeats the purpose and what made, especially that first phase up to, well, I'd say the first two phases up to like Ultron so exciting was that these movies didn't feel like they were made for fans. They felt like they were made for people who like good movies. Mm-hmm. And when you have stuff where the MCU's head is so far up its own butt with like Multiverse of Madness, which just is like so bland and so uninspired and just filled with like, oh, how cool is that moments where you're just like, ew, you know? And then Quantumania is the same sort of thing where it just, yeah.
Yeah, bland Star Wars, right?
Yeah, and then you have Thor Love and Thunder, which is just, you know, like one too many Taika Waititi movies. And and now we have Guardians, which feels like, again, nothing of consequence is happening. It's another, this is a Guardians film for Guardians fans. This is not going to have crossover potential. And I think that's what's leading to the diminishing returns as far as the box office goes. Is
yeah,
you're having these massive opening weekends and then record-setting second weekend drops, which tells me and everybody else that the hardcore fans are going to see it and not many other people are.
Yeah, they're losing interest from the general public, that's for sure. People talk about superhero fatigue. It's just good movie, you know, fatigue.
Yeah.
You don't have, if you make a really, really good movie, people will go to it,
right?
You know,
right.
If you have Marvel behind you, people are going to hear about it and end up going to it, and the word of mouth is going to be good, so it's going to keep making money. It's just these don't have the wheels that the other ones had.
Yeah, and it just doesn't feel like you have to see these movies anymore. Not right. Saying like continuity wise, but Marvel movies and Marvel TV shows. I wouldn't say Marvel TV shows. Marvel movies pre Endgame felt like events that were like cultural events. Have you seen the new X? You know, oh my God, it's so good. You have to see this. And there's just not that anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just feels like, oh, it's another Guardians movie. It'll be on Disney Plus in a bit. Yeah. I can skip this one.
Yeah, and exactly.
Yeah. That's where we're at. Well, that was a digression. I think what you're hearing from us is we've now been talking about these movies for so long, and we've been doing these podcasts, me and Mike, talking about these movies and being just continuously kind of just like left meh after them, that even us, we're starting to wear thin. So I can't imagine what casual viewers are feeling. And
if people you had in the bag, you know, a certain amount of years ago, like no matter what, are kind of becoming tired of your stuff, then there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And you've never met anyone more in the bag for these movies. I, you know, grew up with Marvel Comics, and this really, the Iron Man really reignited my love for this kind of stuff, and got me back into it. So to see it become so bland and uncreative is, yeah, it's a little heartbreaking.
It is. Well, on that note, thanks for talking about this, Mike.
No problem.
Until next time, what do we got coming up? Marvel movies. We've got The Marvels, which Jesus Christ,
cute.
It does, man. Here I am. I'm gonna, you know, in 10 years from now, people will be able to listen to this and be like, oh, I wonder what they did. And fast forward to The Marvels, where I'm just like, but right now, I'm feeling excited.
Iman Vellani is delightful.
She is.
Like, she is perfect casting, if there ever was perfect casting. I did rewatch, let's see here, the first episode and the last episode of Ms. Marvel. And those, like, what's their names?
Bilal?
Adil and Bilal.
Yeah.
Former guests of the podcast. Great guys. They bring such energy and a unique kind of style to it that you're like, this is refreshing. Like, why aren't these guys making a superhero movie? Oh, that's right. DC threw it in the garbage.
I saw a funny meme where somebody said, it was a picture of a guy digging through the dumpster, and it said, David Zasloff really wishing he didn't cancel Batgirl before writer's strike. just kind of funny. But that's a sad situation. But they're making Bad Boys 4 currently as we speak. So good for them.
Yay.
And as far as TV goes, I know we've got Secret Invasion, which kind of looks good again.
Yeah,
it feels like this is going back to that Winter Soldier Civil War tone, so you know, fingers crossed on that one. And perhaps Loki season 2, which I could not care less about.
I'm more on board for that than you. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, with everybody's favorite actor, Jonathan Majors, right now. so, yeah, all that to say, we still remain hopeful, but Jesus, we're starting to wear thin. So here we go. So, Mike, thank you. We'll reconvene and talk Marvel stuff at some point in the future. In the meantime, just listen to the discourse and listen to Bingeworthy. The dude's interviewing like major people. Michael Shannon was a recent one. Rebecca Ferguson, which I just listened to that interview and she's delightful. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, I interviewed some people recently too. I got to interview Jake Gyllenhaal. So we got fun stuff on here. It's not just all Marvel stuff, but yeah. So keep an ear out for that. And until next time, thanks, Mike.
No problem.